Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, I hate to tell you, I'm a grandfather. And that means I'm going to be talking about baby stuff. Yeah, because I got my eye on these things now. What can I buy my daughter and son-in-law for their new baby, my new grandson, to keep him safer and cleaner and happier? And I mean, that's where I'm at. That's where my head's at. And so we're going to be talking to a lot of entrepreneurial people who will help us all to, learn a little bit about some stuff. If you're a mother, a father, an aunt, an uncle, whatever it is, a grandfather like me, or an entrepreneur who wants to learn from another entrepreneur or somebody who is, you know, just starting that journey, because we can all help each other along the way. A good example, I just had breakfast yesterday morning with Sharon Rector. I had her on the show a while back. She is the founder of Baby First TV. But not only that, she has a company called Blusher. She has So Yummy. She gets 2 billion video views a month. 2 billion. Her average post gets 50 million views. Now, tell me mommies and babies don't come first. So this guest we're going to have on right now, her name is Gina Kim Parrick, and she has got a Kickstarter campaign, and I thought, how cool, let's just play it here. Let's check this out.
Did you know that researchers found an average of 100 potentially dangerous bacteria and mold living in each square centimeter of toddler car seats, including E. coli and Salmonella? That's double the amount of germs that are found on the typical toilet seat. Hi, my name is Gina Kim Parrick. I'm a mom, TV reporter, and business owner who created the Nico Easy Wash children's car seat.
Now, check this out. Okay, so that's on Kickstarter, but I've got Gina on the phone. Gina, hi there.
Hey, Alan.
So, first of all,
congratulations on being a grandpa.
Right? Thanks. When I see these things, I go, yeah, that's cool, because I've already experienced it. I've had, you know, my wife and I have had 4 kids of our own that are all grown up now, and now we're grandparents. And so when we see something like this that's cool, we immediately go, that's cool. And then so we want to support it. Now, we're recording this midweek into your second week, and you've almost hit your goal. And we'll let people go check it out. Just go to Kickstarter and type in, you know, like I did in the search, Nico, N-I-K-O. And that's all you got to do. And then bam, you'll see it. It's the Easy Wash children's car seat cover. Very cool. But there's a bigger story here. First of all, you still work. You're still a part-time correspondent for NBC News in Los Angeles, and you do a lot of other stuff. And you just came back from the Olympics. And, you know, you're a busy mom. You're a mom. And by the way, I'm going to hook you up with Sharon Rector, because you guys need to meet, right? 2 billion video views.
Wow.
Right?
It's like, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. But it's because mothers are very, very passionate people, and grandfathers are too, by the way, especially when, you know, it's like your first grandkid, and you look at that kid and you go, I'm going to pave the way to your life to have a better life. You're not going to suffer the way I did. Oh, yes, he will. Don't worry about it. But nobody can stop us from creating our own sufferings. But when we come back, we're going to have a couple of segments with you. I want you to talk about this journey, how you invented this product. Again, it's called the Nico Washable Children's Car Seat Cover. You guys can find out more information on this at NicoCarSeatCover.com, N-I-K-O, CarSeatCover.com. And we want to learn from you, because your experience along the way, I mean, you're a reporter, for goodness sake. You're not a manufacturer. So there are plenty of learnings that you can help us with. So let me take a little break, and we'll come back and we'll talk more about this process. And then you get to be the professor and really give some great advice, like mothers do to a grandfather here, and other lots of other mothers and fathers and grandfathers. I will take a little break. This is Entrepreneur Weekly, Grandpa Behind the Wheel. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
Can't get enough of Entrepreneur Weekly? Check out our podcast on iTunes for even more content. Subscribe today.
Oh.
listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
All right, the product is a Kickstarter campaign. Right now, you guys can help. I'm sure she's only about halfway there as far as the time goes, but she's... My guess is by the time this show airs on Saturday or Sunday or whichever one of our affiliates, you will probably have crested your desired pledge to be able to build this product. We're talking with Gina Kim Perrick. And Nico, again, if you're just joining us, it's a washable children's car seat cover. Gina is on the line. She is a entrepreneur.
I like that.
Mompreneur entrepreneur. Right.
Yep.
And so maybe you could tell your story. You've heard mine. I'm a granddad. I'm interested. So you got me. What do we do next? Tell us your story.
Okay. So like a lot of moms, you know, you go through day in and day out with your child. And my son is 4 now. He was 2 at the time when I came up with this idea. His name is Nico. So that's where the name comes from.
I figured.
I named it after him. He's going to hate me later on when he gets older and realizes what I've done. But so it was about a couple years ago, we were coming back from the beach. I live in Southern California. We go to the beach quite a bit. But on this occasion, he was literally covered head to toe in wet sand. And you know wet sand. You can't get it off of a kid. It'll just stay there until they take a bath. And kids have a lot of, you know, crevices and folds, which are really cute, but the sand got all in there.
Right.
And when it came time to put him in the car, I said, no way am I putting him on that car seat. And I looked for a towel to put it on, but you can't because there's a 5-point harness, right?
Right.
So you have to all of a sudden either start cutting holes in that towel or you're just putting him in the car seat. And that's what I ended up doing. And then for, I want to say weeks after that, I was still fishing sand out of his car seat. It got all wet, slightly moldy. And I thought, this is horrible. And then like a little bit after that, he had a potty training accident.
Oi!
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he gave me a little bit of a warning, but when children are potty training, they'll give you, you have maybe 1 minute. But from the time they say, I need to go, you have about a minute before they're going to release it. Because when they're potty training, they don't know how to hold it, right?
Right.
So
well,
that
and,
was,
and if they've been wearing diapers, they knew they didn't ever had to up until that point anyway. So it's just like, all right,
exactly. But when you're potty training, you want to discourage wearing the diaper during the day because then they have no incentive to hold it and to train.
Right.
So what you do is during the day, you remove the diaper, and then at night, maybe you put on pull-ups because that, when they're sleeping, you know, that control kind of really just goes away. And so no diaper in his, you know, pants, driving on the freeway.
Oh,
it was
no.
Like a 5-minute commute that I had, but in the middle of it, he's like, I gotta go.
It was a 5-alarm blowout is what you're saying.
Yeah, he had a, I mean, fortunately, it wasn't a poop blowout. I've had those too, but this time it was a gallon of potty, literally, that came out of him. I couldn't believe. I was like, where did that come from? Soaked his seat top to bottom. And I said, this is not sustainable. I cannot be... you know, videotaping myself taking off the car seat cover, which is what they encourage you to do. They you have to take off all the harnesses, you know, videotape yourself taking it off so you know how to put it back on and all the holes and everything. And then also a lot of manufacturers encourage you to wash it by hand so that it doesn't make it shrink or, you know, like compromise the quality of the car seat cover. Literally, who has time to do that? Because the next day you got to go back out again and now put your child on a wet car seat. And so I was like, this is totally not cool. I got to come up with the cover. Looked online. There are none in big box stores. So I looked online, and on Amazon I found a few. I ordered almost all of them, and they were horrible. I mean, don't take it from me. You can try ordering some yourself, and you'll see none of them fit. They all cover the cup holders. They have no waterproof anything. And so I was like, all right, there's a market for this. I got to go for it. And that's how the idea came about.
That's amazing. So you made your first one, or did you kind of go out and find somebody to help? Or give me 1 minute on that.
So I thought, okay, I could either, you know, chop up some holes in a towel and just solve my own problem.
Right.
Or I could try to make something that solves a lot of people's problems. So I hired a local seamstress. And boy, you know, if you're going to start a business, this is kind of the pain points that you're going to go through. You're like, who's going to make this? Well, not me. I'm not a seamstress. So you have to go out and hire a seamstress. Well, how do you do that? I went to a sewing repair shop in my local town here in Simi Valley. And I asked around. I was like, do you have a seamstress that, you know, would take on a project? And they're like, well, yes. So you get a referral that way. I bought her like three towels, some Velcro, some, you know, thread, and some waterproof lining. And I was like, go to town. Well, she had to measure the car seat. And, you know, it's a whole process. About sure. 3 weeks later, she had what looked like two towels basically sewn together. And I was like, this is great. But then you can't sell two towels sewn together, right? It just doesn't look good.
Right.
And so you have to start looking for a manufacturer who's going to make you something that looks like it is shelf ready.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was a whole nother process.
All
so
right.
2 years later, we finally have all these prototypes.
Check it out at NikoCarSeatCover.com, N-I-K-O, CarSeatCover.com. Gina Kim Parrick is going to be right back and put her professor's cap on. And we can learn from what she learned. And she learned it the hard way because mm-hmm. that's the only way sometimes you can do it. We'll be right back.
Yep.
It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Professor Gina Kim Parrick is on the line.
Founder, PhD at your service.
That's right. Founder of Niko USA LLC, NikoCarSeatCover.com, mompreneur from NBC correspondent in Los Angeles to manufacturer. Okay, so. Now it is time, and I kind of want to hear, you know, like another minute or so of, you know, how did you find the manufacturing part of this and make it to where you were happy with it? Because, I mean, you were your first customer, so you really must have been, you know, picky about it, right? Because it's your baby in there.
Absolutely. So there's so many different routes you can go to manufacturing. You could go to China and find one yourself. You could make it in your garage and hope that it's shelf ready. What happened to me was really a perfect storm of incidences. So I see a lot of events here in Los Angeles with the Korean-American community because I'm also fluent in Korean.
Ah.
And so, yeah, they're like, okay, NBC, why don't you come and MC for us? It's a very natural thing. I do it like many, many times a year. And at one of the events, one of the board members was the founder and owner of Haute Couture,
oh.
which is like a store for women's clothing.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, listen, I got this idea. Can you help me out? And he goes, no, I can't, but my friend Dan can. And so I got referred to Dan Kang, who is the owner of My Dyer, and they make almost all the clothes for Kirkland, the Costco brand,
yeah.
Nordstrom,
oh.
and LuLaRoe, and many, many others.
Oh, my gosh. It's all who
I
you know, lady. It's all who you know.
It's all in who you know. So, you know, Justin, who's the owner of this clothing store, introduces me to Dan. And Dan, apparently, has, you know, I mean, the man's worth, like, probably $1 billion. He's got no time for people like me. But because Justin introduced me to Dan, 2 minutes after Justin sent the email introducing us, Dan called me.
Wow.
And he goes, hey, I've got four kids. This sounds amazing. Come and see me.
All right.
So I go and see him at his facilities in Long Beach, and he's like, no worries, I'll make this for you. And I'm like,
oh my.
How much? I know. And he's like, don't worry about it. Just pay me when you get it made.
That's so awesome.
I know. So I totally got lucky on that. And of course, because he made it, it looks amazing. But even then, we went through probably three or four iterations to get the waterproof bottom, to get the pockets on the side where you can store toys and food. That was a big thing with me because the cup holders never hold enough stuff.
All right,
and then
all
the
right.
cup holder openings. Here,
let
and,
me do this.
Yeah.
It's funny because what you're describing there is exactly why Shark Tank is such a huge hit, because people want to get to those Damon Johns and everybody that's there.
That's right.
Because it's all who you know. So let's let that be the first thing in our lesson. We've got about 3.5 minutes. I need like 3 1-minute awesome lessons from you, Professor. So it's your
yes.
turn.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you have an amazing idea,
yep.
send it out to the universe. And don't be afraid to simmer on it. So many people are in such a hurry. And, you know, you talk to entrepreneurs all day long. They'll tell you the same thing. It feels like a rush. Like, oh, my God, I better invent this before somebody else does. And
right.
so you make a lot of mistakes early on because you're in such a rush to get it out there. don't. If it's a great enough idea, it will survive any other competitors that are out there. And also that simmer time is extremely important. And when you send it out to the world, you will get people jumping on your bandwagon and you can't stop them.
They'll be like,
I love your product. I'm Dan King. I'm going to help you. Or I'm a mom. I'm totally going to preach this out to everybody. Okay. That's lesson number one.
Lesson number one. Send it out to the universe. You check it out at Kickstarter campaign, Niko, N-I-K-O. Just Google that or look at that. You'll see it. Anyway, number two.
Okay, number two, get your finances in order. This stuff is not cheap. You have to hire a social media guru if you're kind of a, you know, if you don't want to spend 24 hours a day on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, you should hire somebody who knows what they're doing, who knows how to buy ads, who knows how to create your Kickstarter page. All that costs money. I own a video production company. Fortunately, I got about $100,000 worth of videos through my own company, and I didn't have to pay a dime because all these guys are on my payroll.
Right.
So you need videos, you need this, you need that, you need to make the prototypes. Unless you have a fairy godfather like I did, you're going to have to pay for all of your prototypes. So where are you going to get that funding? You know, is it the credit cards? Is it a loan? Is it a line of credit on your home? Figure that out. That's number two. Money is extremely good to have.
All right, get your finances in order because you're going to have R&D, marketing, videos, and all that. Number three.
Number three. Don't always go to retail. I am launching through e-commerce only after this because I've heard horror stories about Costco and, you know, Target returning millions of goods because, you know, their customers didn't like it or something. And now you're stuck with a million pieces of inventory.
Right.
Don't rush to retail. Go the e-commerce route. That is the brave new world.
You know what's funny? And I have about 30 seconds. I'm going to just take my time for a moment. I have a friend who has a website. He's selling a product. He's selling 100,000 a month of these, not dollars, 100,000 products. So I won't tell you what it is because it doesn't matter. It can work. All right.
Wow.
Don't go to retail. Any last final thoughts? You got about 45 seconds.
You know, I would just say go for it. I've always been the type of person that doesn't, you know, take the temperature in the pool. I don't put a stick in it to see how deep it is. Looks deep enough, I jump in. A lot of people get stuck doing business plan after business plan, thinking about it. If you know you've got a great idea, jump in and get it done.
I love it. And I'm a believer. Oh, that's the song. Gina Camperic, thank you.
And congratulations on a year.
I know, right? I know, yeah. This is my 1 year kind of anniversary for Entrepreneur Weekly. We launched this. We're on about 45 stations. Enough about me, NikoCarSeatCover.com. You can also find it on Kickstarter right now. The campaign's about halfway done. Go support this. It's good. Gina, thank you. Excellent.
Love you and love your show, Alan.
Thank you very much. All right, there's more Entrepreneur Weekly. Be right back.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
So my job is fun. I hope you understand how fun it is. I get to talk to thought leaders, people that have their S together, their shiznit. I didn't say what you think I said. I said shiznit, but you know what I mean. And they've lived life, they've failed, they've won, they've gathered their stuff together, and they're like, okay, I can do this thing. And they know how to focus on the good stuff. You know, they know how to be themselves because everybody else is taken. You know what? They just have their stuff together, if you know what I'm saying. And nothing changes until you do, right? Well, guess what? Mike Robbins wrote all three of those books. Focus on the good stuff. Be yourself because everyone else is already taken and nothing changes until you do. And he's got his fourth book called How to Eat Everything You Want and Not Get Fat. No, I'm joking. Mike Robbins is on the line. Mike, your fourth book is called Bring Your Whole Self to Work, all right? Welcome to the show, brother. Welcome
to
the show.
Yeah. Thank you. Although I'd like to write a book about how to eat everything you want and not get fat. That one would sell really well, and I would read it for sure.
Could you tell I'm hungry? Because I'm like thinking, what can I eat and not get fat? Okay.
Yeah.
But first of all, I love the names of your books. I watched your TEDx talk. Was it a TEDx or just a TED or what was it?
Yeah, I've given three, actually, but the one I think you were watching was TEDx at TEDx Berkeley a few years ago.
Yeah.
Your whole self to work.
Yeah. How do you give three? I thought you do it once and you're one and done. What's going on?
You know, they asked me back a couple times. I did one on appreciation, one on authenticity, and then the one at TEDx Berkeley was on bringing your whole self to work, which I actually gave that talk before I wrote the book, but that was sort of part of the inspiration putting that talk together. And then I realized I wanted to write a book about some of the core themes that I talked about in that talk and have been researching and focusing on in my business for the last 17 years.
That's awesome. By the way, Mike's books are best-selling books have been translated into 15 different languages. Did you know that, Mike?
I did know that.
No, it says 14, but I'm gonna translate it into pig Latin for you. By the way,
I was gonna say you added one, but I'll take the extra one. What the heck?
Pig Latin. Bring your whole self to work. Nay, I guess I don't know how you do that. Anyway, so I'm gonna tell you a story about how I had to bring my whole self to work. All right.
Okay.
And one time in my life, there was a period in my life where things sucked bad. And I think we all have that.
For sure.
I was probably 32 or 3 years old. I'm about to be 58. I know I sound a hell of a lot younger than that, but it's because I can do it on the radio and fake everybody out. But anyway, the point is I was young and ignorant. And I made mistakes, and I had to do a radio show. So I remember one day I walked up to the studio, and I was about to go in the front door, and I stopped at the front door, and I thought, I got to bring my whole self to work, right? Mm-hmm. And it's literally the name of your new book. It just came out, right?
Yeah, just came out.
And I was thinking, how am I going to bring my whole self to work when I am a broken man? I was so broken, literally. I can't say I was crying on the way to the studio because there was no cry left in me. I was just sitting there like a dead zombie looking at the road ahead of me thinking, I have so effed up my whole life. And I didn't do anything horrible, but that's how you feel when you're dragging your knuckles on the ground after, you know, failing at this, that, or the other. And failing is good, as you and I will talk once I let you talk. So shut up. Let me finish my story. Point is, I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to leave my broken life in a brown paper bag outside the door like a bunch of smoldering ashes, and I'm just going to leave them out here. And I'm going to go inside and I'm going to bring my whole self to work. So I went in, and the guy that was the co-host of the show I was doing 25 years ago, he says to me at the end, he goes, how do you do that? Because he knows what I was going through. He knew what I was going through. We're still friends to this day. And I go, what? He goes, how do you be that happy, that fun, that guy that people expect you to be? Because I mean, as a radio show host, you got to put on your A game. How do you do that? I said, you know what? I leave my private life and my broken self outside the door. Nobody wants to know about my crap. Nobody wants. And we made up this thing. And I said, you know what? I don't want to know about your S, you know, the word that goes with that. And I don't want you to know about my S. So I'm going to leave my S at home. It's my S and your S. And just leave it at home when we go to work. Because it's like, my God, nobody wants that crap in their life of other people's problems. These are all problems that are self-inflicted. So tell us now about your brand new book, Bring Your Whole Self to Work. What was the inspiration for that?
Well, part of it is, you know, for the last 17 years, I've been, you know, I live here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I travel around. I've worked with a lot of companies in Silicon Valley, but all over the country and even around the world. And a lot of what I talk about, what my books are about, what my work's about when I go in and speak inside of these organizations, is about how do we create the conditions where people can really thrive. And actually, even to your point in the story you were just making, on the one hand, nobody really wants to hear about our problems. And at the same time, we're all human beings, right? Trying to navigate all the complexity and challenge and ups and downs of life. And we got to show up at work. Right. So at some level, the co-host you mentioned on the show, he knew a bit of what was going on in your life and was like, wow, how do you do that? You just got on the radio and seemed to, you know, get all excited. And right. So what the book is really about is how do we create those kind of relationships at work where we feel safe and connected and can trust each other so that I don't necessarily have to tell everybody I work with all my problems per se, but I know that it's safe enough that I could. And in so doing, you know, I would imagine part of the relationship you had with that co-host way back when is part of what allowed you to be able to show up and do your job well, even in the midst of going through all that difficulty.
No, you know what's funny is I would have hoped that it was that way, but he, like everybody else, when you're down, people want to kick your front teeth out. You know what I mean? And he kind of took a lot of joy of watching me struggle because I was, to him, I was this arrogant jerk who everything had always gone really good for. And guess what? I finally tripped and fell. And not only did I skin my knees, I mean, I busted out my front teeth. And he was enjoying that. And he said to me one day, he said, you know, he said, a leopard doesn't change its spots. And I looked at him and I went, wow, that means I am not capable of changing. And I said, you know what? I'm not a leopard. I'm not a tiger. I'm not. I had the tiger, by the way. I'm a man, and I can change. And I think that part of him not letting me have any slack is what helped me to change. Adversity is good for you. We're going to come back with more of Mike Robbins. Check him out. Mike-Robbins.com. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. This is a good one. We'll be right back.
Can't get enough of Entrepreneur Weekly? Check out our podcast on iTunes for even more content. Subscribe today.
You know, some days I come to work feeling like James Brown, but there are other days when I just feel like James, you know, the loser. Mike Robbins is on the line with us. He's got a new book out, Bring Your Whole Self to Work. You know, I don't know that there's anybody that goes to work every day feeling like, you know, that they're on top of the world. I would guess that if you took a poll, you would find that it's more than 50%, probably more like 60% of the time we feel like garbage, but we got to put on our game and bring our whole self to work. Your new book just came out. I noticed there's a couple little questions you guys gave us. Can crying at work actually help your career? I'm like, all right, I got to ask that one. You know, I have not cried in years that anybody has seen me. I'm talking 40 years. I watched the movie Braveheart, and that movie made me cry. And I remember crying when I was driving home after dropping off, I don't know, whoever I went to see the movie, on my way home, and I started crying. I thought to myself, God, I have a good life. I think sometimes we need to, you know, there was an old saying that says, I was sad when I had no shoes until I saw a man that had no feet. Yeah. So I think we need to have perspective sometimes. And some people, they're like, all they do is feel sorry for themselves, and they don't realize, you know what? You got your health. You got all your limbs and all your digits. You're not an ugly person. Okay, if you are, you know, put some makeup on, put a wig on, fix that.
Right.
But, I mean, perspective. So how do you possibly say, can crying help your career? Can it?
It can to a certain degree. I mean, here's, like, the premise of my book, the subtitle of the book, Bring Your Whole Self to Work, is how vulnerability unlocks creativity, connection, and performance. And one of the things that we've learned and what the research shows us, there was a study that Google did a few years back, and they were looking at, they spent 3 years studying, it's called Project Aristotle, what creates the conditions for high performance for teams. And this is for teams inside of Google or even bigger companies. This is for teams, entrepreneurs who have small teams. This is in every environment. They didn't just study their own company. They looked at all this data and metadata from sort of across industry and around the world. And after 3 years of studying, they came back with five key elements that are necessary to create high performance. And the number one element is what they call psychological safety. And what psychological safety means is basically trust at a group level. It means I can take a risk, I can make a mistake, I can disagree, I can maybe even be emotional or have a bad day or be going through something difficult, and I'm not going to get kicked out of the group. I'm not going to get shunned or shamed or ridiculed because the group has actually created that sense of safety. And my background is actually, I played baseball all growing up. I got drafted out of high school by the Yankees. I didn't end up signing with the Yankees because I got an opportunity to play baseball at Stanford. Then I got drafted out of Stanford by the Kansas City Royals and signed with the Royals. I ended up getting injured as a pitcher. I hurt my arm when I was in the minor leagues, but I played baseball from the age of 7 until I got hurt at 23. And then three surgeries later at 25, I had to retire. And that was personally challenging. I've written about that in some of my previous books. But the thing that I was really fascinated by, in addition to the game itself, was I was fascinated by the whole team dynamic, and that sometimes I was on teams where the talent was really strong, but the team wasn't very good. And other times I was on teams where, you know, the talent was pretty good, not great, and the team was fantastic. And so really what I've been fascinated by, you know, after baseball, I spent just a couple of years working in the tech world, but for the last 17 years as a consultant working with all these different companies, looking at what creates that environment where people can thrive. And so all the way back to the question about crying, it's like, no, we don't have to show up at work and cry per se. But if you work in an environment where if you did cry, people wouldn't laugh at you or point at you or think, what's wrong with you, or get it together. But you could actually, just like you could have a bad day, you could get upset, you could disagree, you could fall on your face. The irony is when we create that kind of space, people are more likely to thrive. They're more likely to trust each other. They're more likely to collaborate and work together, which is what allows for high performance. Mm.
And I got to tell you, the opposite of that sucks.
Yes.
Seriously, because I've had that in my company. And when people are not working together because of whatever crap it is, it makes the company like trying to swim in mud. Yeah. All right. Let me ask you about emotional intelligence. I noticed, you know, you think that's important. Talk about that.
Well, so emotional intelligence is basically, right, you think about our IQ, our intellectual quotient.
Right.
About 20 years ago, a guy named Daniel Goleman wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence, which basically said that 2/3 of our success, particularly at work, is based on our emotional quotient or our emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence, and since then there's been a ton of research and lots of books. It's one of the core principles I wrote about in Bring Your Whole Self to Work. But essentially, I was giving a talk actually down in Silicon Valley at Adobe, and I was talking to a bunch of leaders, and Jeff, who was the head of talent at the time at Adobe, introduced me, and he said, Mike's going to talk to us about emotional intelligence. I've always believed that your IQ gets you your job, but your EQ gets you promoted.
Yes.
And I stood up and I said, thanks, Jeff. And I looked at everybody and said, well, that's basically what I was about to talk about for the next hour.
Yeah.
But in reality, like, what makes us effective in our work so much has to do with our emotional intelligence, which is about self-management and like self-awareness and self-management, right? Can I manage myself? Your story you mentioned earlier about being in a really bad place in your 30s, but showing up at work and being able to do your job anyway, some of that is self-management, self-awareness. Wow, I'm really in a tough spot, but I still have to show up at work. And then the other part of emotional intelligence is social awareness and relationship management. Who am I talking to? Who am I dealing with? How do I interact with these people in a way that's both effective, understanding, empathetic for them? Because again, you can be really smart, but not necessarily a good leader or a good communicator.
Yep. Yeah. Good stuff, man. We're talking to Mike Robbins, and Mike-Robbins.com. He has a brand new book out, Bring Your Whole Self to Work. Leave the ugly and smelly stuff home. We'll take a break. We're going to come back and talk about authenticity continuum. What the heck is that? We'll find out. Entrepreneur Weekly. Now I'm a
believer. Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
You know, it pisses me off when somebody gets all the good names for books, you know, like Focus on the Good Stuff. That would have been my book. Nothing Changes Until You Do. I could have wrote that book. Be Yourself, Everyone Else Is Already Taken. That's my book. But no, Mike Robbins wrote them all. Pisses me off. Really does. And now he took my whole story, bring your whole self to work, and he wrote a book on it. It's my story, Mike. I mean, don't you feel bad about taking my book?
Sorry, man. Sorry,
it was like,
yeah.
My book. Anyway, could you change it and just put co-authored by Alan Taylor? That'd be cool.
All right.
All right, let's talk about this. In the last segment, we were kind of rolling along, and I said authenticity continuum.
Yes.
What is that?
Well, authenticity is fundamental to all my work. It's the first principle of the five that I talk about in Bring Your Whole Self to Work. But what I've learned over the years of studying authenticity is I think some people misunderstand what authenticity means, particularly at work. I remember a number of years ago giving a speech at a conference, and my keynote was about authenticity. And I get off stage, and I'm literally like just walking off stage, and this guy makes a beeline right over to me, gets right in my face. He says, I'm authentic all the time. And I was like, okay. He was like upset, right? I was like, dude, what's the problem? He was like, well, I've lost some jobs because of that. I said, really?
No, his word was obnoxious.
Exactly.
You got this wrong, buddy. It's authentic, not obnoxious. Okay.
Well, you know what's ironic is that that was literally the question that I asked him. I was like, you're surprised, and I looked at him and I said, now tell me the truth. Is it authentic or obnoxious? And then he was sort of shocked that I asked him that. And then he laughed and said, well, you know, maybe a little bit of both. And I said, all right, man, I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the self-awareness. I said, but if I had to guess, I bet it was the obnoxious, the guy you fired, not the authentic.
Right.
So one of the things that happens, and we get into this argument, particularly here in this country, between like direct versus indirect, you know, and I work with people on the East Coast and in New York, and they'll say, oh, we're direct. We just tell like it is, or Philadelphia, or places like Boston. And then I live in California, and people are like, oh, people are just more passive aggressive. And there is some truth to that. But the reality is what authenticity is about. Yes, it's about being honest, but it's more than simply just being honest. It's we have to remove something from our honesty, and then we have to add something to it. So the continuum is on one side of the continuum is kind of phony, you know, inauthentic. On the other side, the far side of the continuum is authentic, but in the middle is honesty. And honesty is good, but like I say to people, we have to remove something from our honesty and add something to it. The thing we have to remove is our self-righteousness.
Ooh.
Right? That like, I'm right, you're wrong.
Right.
And then the thing we have to add to it, which we were talking about a little bit earlier in our conversation, is vulnerability. Hmm. So if we take honesty, we remove the self-righteousness, we add the vulnerability to it. Now that gets us to authenticity, which is ultimately the goal. The thing about self-righteousness, though, that's really tricky is that when we're being self-righteous, we don't think we're being self-righteous. We think we're right.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really looking at, it's not, I'm not saying to people water down your opinion. I'm not saying don't be passionate. What I am saying is there's a difference between righteousness and conviction. When I'm convicted about something, I believe it to be true. I'll speak up. I'll challenge someone. I'm willing to even defend it. But I realize I might be wrong, or at least there might be another way to look at this. When I'm self-righteous, it's simply, I'm right. You're wrong. Shut up.
Okay. I got to read you a text I sent my son-in-law. because it was so funny. He was talking about a guy that he was trying to convince of something. And my son-in-law, he's this young version of me, of course.
Right.
And I love the fact that my daughter married, you know, her dad. Cause I mean, literally I don't know anybody that's more like me than this guy. So watching him is like, I do like him, but I get him. I mean, immediately I go, all right, well, I remember when I was you and did that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, so he's making an excuse for why, you know, this whole relationship isn't working with this guy that works with us. And actually it's his cousin. I said, just drop any judgment and it will have a profound impact. Otherwise, all he sees is the contempt.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, man, I am so happy to be there for my son-in-law and my boys and my daughter, because I'm at that stage of my life where it's like I am now starting to learn how to be authentic without the judgment, the willfulness. And it's, of course, we all have to watch these things.
We do. But, it's tricky. You know, and we live in a world where there's a ton of it everywhere. We turn on the news. We listen to people. It's just, you know, and to use the word contempt is a really interesting and powerful word. There's one of my favorite quotes. It's from Martin Luther King. He said, we have no morally persuasive power with those who can feel our underlying contempt.
Exactly. Brother, I'm gonna go look that one up. All right, here's the deal. Because how do you do all that after living the life of Ferris Bueller? Because that's my life, right? Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You guys check out this book, Bring Your Whole Self to Work, and his other ones, Mike Robbins, Focus on the Good Stuff, Be Yourself. How did I screw that one? Be yourself, everyone else is taken. And nothing changes until you do. Mike Robbins, you're the best, man. Thank you so much. Great advice.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, that's about it for me. Being authentically not a great radio host because I screwed up the name of his book. But you know what? That's authentic and obnoxious. See you next week, everyone.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.